You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Looking to refresh your closet, home, or beauty routine this spring? Walmart's got all the stylish goods in one stop. From chic new looks and the latest makeup to quality furniture and tableware. Go to walmart.com/nowtrending. That's walmart.com/nowtrending for the hottest fashion, home, and beauty finds. Your style at Walmart.
Welcome to the Olive Podcast. I'm Janine, Olive's deputy editor and podcast host, and each episode I'll be catching up with chefs, cookery writers, and characters from the food scene in Britain and beyond. Join us each week to expand your food knowledge as our guests share 10 things we need to know about the specialist subject. And do listen out for our effortless bonus episodes where they also reveal their top cooking cheats, hacks, and shortcuts. I'm delighted to welcome Perry Wakeman to the podcast today. Perry is Director and Chief of Cheese at Rennet and Ryan Cheesemongers in Cambridge. He is an expert in his field, from judging at the World Cheese Awards to holding the highest certification possible at the Academy of Cheese. In 2022, Perry won the first ever Affineur of the Year competition, and we're going to take a deep dive into exactly what an affineur is today. Welcome, Perry.
Yeah, thanks for that lovely introduction. No, I kind of forget what you've done over the last 11 years.
Yeah, and I know there's more than that because I've seen on your webpage there's a long list of accolades, yeah. But that's just the kind of tip of the iceberg. First of all, could you tell us a bit about you and how you ended up working in the cheese world? Because I think people aren't, you know, you're not at school maybe like thinking I'm going to be a cheesemonger, or maybe you were, I don't know.
Yeah, it never works out like that. That you think people like grew up with cheese, but I pretty much growing up just like knew the basics, like going to supermarkets, and that's kind of, was my world, I suppose, in terms of cheese. And I always enjoyed cheese. My family enjoyed food, but until really we got into, I basically started in IT.
Oh, really?
So as an IT consultant in London, I had this kind of champagne lifestyle lemonade budget, so terrible salary and an amazing expenses budget. And at a very young age, I was fortunate enough to go around to some really nice restaurants and, wow, you know, treat people, let's just put it in that kind of area, and get them drunk and eat some really nice food for them to continue on their journey with the company that I was with. So the first time I experienced artisan cheese was the cheese trolley, you know, like rolling out 30 different cheeses.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't believe there was that
many
varieties.
That's quite high-end, the cheese trolley, isn't it?
The cheese trolley, like being a cheese chauffeur, I think should be like a new job title. Yeah. So yeah, I was just really impressed by this guy and just couldn't believe that I'm seeing six Brie's, but they're not Brie's. And it really intrigued me.
Nice.
And there were some British cheeses there. I went on down to the British Cheese Awards, which was held in Oxford.
Yeah.
I was very young at that point, and I went to the day before, which wasn't, it was kind of like meet all the cheesemakers. So I met like Tim Jones, Mary Quick, and all these people kind of inspired me and just said, if you want to know more about it, come to the farm and make cheese with us.
Wow.
So I did a bit of that. And then I met Mark's our MD, and his wife Jan. And I spoke to them. They were really into cheese in Cambridge and selling it to the Cambridge colleges. And I spoke to them on Friday and started on Monday. And that was 11 years ago.
That's amazing. So you just literally quit your job over a weekend and were like, I'm gonna go make cheese.
Pretty much. It was just so interesting for me how diverse and just how nice the people were, the sense of community.
Yeah.
And it's never, cheese isn't a thing, artisan cheese isn't a thing which is the same all the time.
Yeah.
And I was used to things being the same all the time. So I did that. And then halfway through our journey, you know, it was more interesting to me, the art of affinage, like making cheese.
So tell us what affinage actually is. What is it? What's the history of it?
Yeah, so affinage is, the quickest translation is to refine.
Okay.
So refining cheese, maturing cheese, and that's, there's not a proper English word for it. It's so kind of new in this country that, and And kind of the history of it is that bit that kind of goes missing in actually everyone's brain,
yeah.
which is everyone thinks milking cows, she's yeah. milking cows, like cows in the field, yeah. You know, people in vats and putting these molds, and then you got cheese.
Yeah.
But there's something...
Isn't that what happens?
No, it isn't. It isn't. Yeah, and there's this part where you use selective pressures,
yeah.
brushing, washing, turning, humidity, temperature, to get the best out of the cheese.
Yeah.
So changing the temperature can change the chemistry in the cheese. Brushing the rinds can create new bacteria, biomes on the outside, yeah. which takes interesting flavors. And the French have been doing it for years.
Right.
So I went over to France, studied with this chap called Hervé Mons, who's like the godfather of affinage and well known over there.
So you went and found the most important guy and yeah, worked with him. I love that.
Yeah. And, you know, the interesting thing is a really good foundation for me, but there's no path in affinage in the UK.
Right.
I mean, the Academy of Cheese are doing a little bit on maturing, but there's no book or university you can go to study it. So you're kind of learning on the job, and we're kind of like, at the start of this amazing industry.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So last year, it was actually the first Affineur of the Year competition in
the UK. First ever in Britain,
That's amazing.
Affineur of the Year competition.
And you won.
And I won, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And borderline, like, emotional.
Yeah, I bet.
Which was really strange for me, because, you know, I've been maturing cheese for some time. You get, I think I said in my like acceptance speech, it's me going up and getting an award and
yeah.
wrestling a mic off Mary Quinn. Yeah. And I just kind of like had this moment where I was like, I get loads of praise about the cheeses that are mature from
yeah.
customers and things like that. But to have five of your peers technically judge that cheese as the best,
yeah.
Dedicate yourself to this art, which is relatively unknown. And then there was another side to the competition as well,
yeah.
which was People's Choice Awards. So 100 to 150 people in a room going around trying these 11 cheeses that all affineurs in the UK matured, mine being one of them. And they selected that cheese to be their People's Choice as well.
So they agreed with the judges.
Yeah.
I love that.
Which is like, it is actually
yeah.
so much more important
yeah.
than this nice award that I've brought out and you guys can't see
on
the desk.
You made an absolute crowd for me. Yeah, Perry's brought his award in and it's a nice big wooden. I thought he brought me a truckle of cheese.
A truckle of cheese. It's just a lump of wood. I'm sorry.
Devastated. I was really disappointed.
Yeah.
But practically, like, tell us what you had to do for the competition, because this is quite fascinating to me. You were all given... Exactly the same cheddar.
Exactly the same cheddar, exactly the same time,
yep.
exactly the same batch made, all yep. at the same time. And then we all matured them. So people involved was obviously myself, Rennet and Rind, Neil's Yard, Paxton's,
yeah,
Number 2 Pound
all
Street, all the lovely biggies. Brendisa was involved
wow.
in it. So it was it felt like a start of something
yeah.
that we were all coming together to try and create.
Do something.
And, yeah, I just wanted to do, like, no gimmicks, just do what I do,
yeah.
which is mature a really good cheddar. And I looked at the profile of the cheese. You know, cheddar's normally matured around 8 to 10 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And thought, I haven't got enough time to make this a big flavor. The best thing I can do is add more temperature into it. More temperature, less humidity, means it dries quicker.
Uh-huh.
So essentially what I did was hammer the cheese with humidity and water and turn the temperature up by 13 degrees.
To speed things up. Wow.
And we just had this beautiful profile. The cheese was called Priscilla, by the way.
Why did you call it Priscilla?
I don't know.
No,
I don't know.
Priscilla Presley?
I have no idea. There's a moment in a cheese maturing journey.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm with a cheese and they've all got names.
And the name comes into your head.
That sounds really artistic. But yeah, so Priscilla came to me, and that sounds rather peculiar, doesn't it? Came to me, and yeah, Priscilla won. And like I said, winning the People's Choice
yeah.
and winning the judges was so important, because it shows affinage and maturing cheese works.
Yeah.
So on one level, you've got like Patrick McWiggan, like amazing people who
yeah.
really know their cheese. And then on the other side, you've got people who know their cheese, like their cheese, but
yeah.
probably won't judge it at a technical level. So maturing cheese translates. So the better you mature a cheese,
yeah.
the more people will buy of it. And that was kind of the moment, I suppose, when I got up there, which made me quite emotional thinking about that connection,
yeah.
that probably the fact that you know, my job safe. That maturing cheese matters, yeah. And affinage matters.
And do you think after the competition, the public perception of affinage, is it more out there now? More people understand what it means? Because when Keith, my boss, first said, you know, affinage of the year, I was like, what the heck is that?
Yeah. And so it's more out there.
Yeah.
People are more interested in British cheese. People are more interested in artisan. People want to know where their food come from.
Yeah.
People would like to get more value out of their cheese. And it's definitely grown as an industry, but we've got a long way to go.
Yeah.
Because it's just fascinating when you talk to people and they engage, you know, they go down to their deli. That's mostly where you get your artisan, our actual artisan cheese from. And this lump of cheddar is traditionally cloth bound and matured on wood over months rather than in vat packs and... And once people work that out, you know...
The amount of love that's gone into it and care.
The amount of love. Yeah. And we're relatively like micro-affineurs. So I've got my hands on every single cheese, knowing where that's going to go. I've got a plan for every single cheese, what restaurant it's going to go to, when it's going to fit into one of our kind of flagship products, which is called like Mystery Cheese Box, 5 cheeses in a box.
Yeah.
And I mature them specifically for that kind of like area. And that's a really nice thing to be able to do and have that kind of arc and flow roller coaster of cheese being amazing and cheese being not as great, but every cheese kind of has a home.
Yeah, I love that.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best nut sound you've ever heard.
Let's talk a bit about the daily practice of an affineur. When you came in today, you said you'd got up at 3 a.m. to go down to start, what goes on? What goes on, like, you know, daily?
Admittedly, I'm embellishing that a little bit.
trying to impress.
Today. Regularly they're early starts.
We
first thing we've got to do is go in the maturing rooms.
Yeah.
You'll be amazed what can happen in 24 hours.
How many cheeses have you got in your maturing room at the minute, would you say?
God, I mean, so I think at the moment... it's about 920 cheeses, and that's a variety of sizes. So that's like 25 kilo down to 1 kilo down to 250 gram.
Wow.
So, it's a lot of cheese to kind of look after.
Yeah.
So into the maturing rooms, look at the plan. So I'm really into my detail.
Yeah.
Excels, charts, temperatures, what happened at this point. How did I feel about that cheese at that point? Really connecting with the cheese. And then if it needs it, ironing, so getting the T-shaped object that I have in front of me, it's a T-shaped object hollowed out in the middle, plunging that into the cheese, it brings out a core, and then flicking that off and just trying a little piece of the
tiny cheese,
and then resealing it. And just working out where that path of that batch is at the moment.
Yeah.
Because we're kind of looking at a timeline, a string of not only, you know, you don't just add cheese and cheese gets better.
Yeah.
You don't just add time to cheese and it gets better. You've got to find that point where it'd be at its best.
Right.
So that's the skill trying to, and obviously what it needs to.
So tasting's important as well. And
And it's kind of over the years trying the same cheeses week in, week out for 11 years, you kind of get to know them really, really.
And you know where it's going next.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this is about a week away from exactly where I want
it to be. It's a week away. This is a bit more. This needs a little bit more brushing. This needs to be turned more frequently.
What does a brushing do?
Yeah, so it can do a number of things. So there's a thing that might shock horror people, which is cheese mites. That's the main thing that we're talking about. These are little kind of creatures that live on the rinds of cheeses. And
do they live on all cheese?
Not all cheeses, mainly cheddars and Stiltons
and
cave age, like long age stuff.
They're friendly mites.
They're friendly. You kind of want them to, you like, garden. You got to kind of be a gardener and look after them.
Yeah.
Too much, and you get a cheese like Mimulet, and it looked like a moon surface, like craters.
Because they've had a little nibble of it.
Yeah, and you might want that.
Yeah.
You might want that. The Mimulet, like really famous cannonball cheese, has got that and it's got big flavour. And sometimes you don't. So you have to brush them off with a hard brush.
Right.
or brush them off not so much, so they kind of maintain the area. And you can get a cheese which feels maybe too creamy and it could go chewy. So you kind of want the mite to drive down, open up the cheese a little bit. Yeah. Oxygen, you know, moisture rushes out more quickly.
Yeah.
And then you get a more chewy cheese.
Yeah. What do the brushes look like?
Yeah, so they're kind of like rectangle shape. They're kind of just like a beard brush, but I've the only one with a beard here. So, so maybe
I have no idea what a beard brush like so, a paintbrush. No,
yeah, like a paintbrush, but longer, okay. like a horse's brush, I suppose. Right, if you was brushing,
that's where I have no frame of reference for.
I might have to draw it, but yeah, that's it's fine. Kind of it's like the end of a toothbrush,
oh, I get
but
you.
Larger.
Okay, yeah,
that's better.
I know what you mean now.
Yeah, and I use two styles. One's kind of artificial, and that's kind of a very dry brush, and then one's an organic one, which is natural hair, and that's got natural oils in it. So cheese is alive. You've got spores on the outside, and you've got these filament molds, which are like little trees with seeds on the end.
Yeah.
And sometimes you want to trap them because you don't want them to procreate on the outside of cheese because that might be mushroomy, earthy.
Yeah.
So you use the organic brush to trap those spores in the hair follicles of the brush.
Okay.
And you kind of push down that spore being there and being prominent within the cheese.
How did people work all of this out in the
first place?
I don't
know. I don't know. Some of these are my own techniques.
Okay. It's come from your crazy mind.
Oh, yeah. Well, we did this thing, British Cheese Weekender, which was set up by the Academy of Cheese. And I was explaining, someone asked me about brushing techniques. I've never discussed it before.
Yeah.
And I was showing the small concentric circles, like small little, they could, like, don't disturb the rind too much, and then heavily brushing the cheese to open the surface, and then brushing off, and all these weird and wonderful techniques. I probably should write a book.
I think you should. I think that's definitely next on the cards. The other things you can do, so like more obvious techniques. So I read about you can put brine on the rind, you can bathe it in beer and cider, you can rub it with oil or lard. Are those things that you employ as well?
Yeah, so we do a cheese which is called Bybrook, which is like a Conte Mountainess style cheese made by Giuliana down in Wiltshire. And I wash that in the local rapeseed oil.
Nice.
And that's a real pleasure to do.
Yeah.
The smell was incredible. Like, imagine the smell of oil.
Yeah, and it's that lovely yellow colour.
Is that,
as well.
Rapeseed oil, it's like that really rich yellow colour. Mm. But whenever you wash them, it smells of peach.
Oh, really? Wow.
Which I haven't worked out that connection yet. So I think oil and that kind of dense kind of lingers. It's not particularly pleasant, but whenever you wash them, it just smells of peaches.
Yeah, and then does the rind gradually develop because of the washing?
So you're adding layer on layer on layer.
Yeah.
And, you know, with a brine, water, salt, you're trying to basically allow a more hospitable ground for better bacteria that taste good on there. And it's only like a 2% brine. It changes between it. And it's the same with wash rind cheeses as in terms of cider and a little bit of cider in there.
Yeah.
But the balance is you've got to be really careful with the balance because there's a thing, mainly it's B. linens, but there's loads of microbes on the outside of the cheese that are creating.
Yeah.
But when you add alcohol, it accelerates breakdown.
Okay.
So you can get those really like epoisse, like squash cheeses.
That quite smelly.
Yeah, very smelly. And do you know, that's the crazy thing about wash rind cheeses. Everyone's like, that is not for me.
Yeah.
It smells like my gym bag.
But actually the taste isn't.
No.
Yeah.
It's so buttery and easygoing.
Yeah.
And if you can break through that smell barrier.
Yeah. Just have to.
Yeah, you'd be in for a really big treat. Yeah. So, more wash rind cheeses people are scared of. They should try more
should
of those.
Should just jump in and have them.
Mm.
Let's talk a little bit about timelines because you said, you know, it can range from a few weeks to several years depending on the cheese. How do you decide what that is, the timeline?
Yeah, it's difficult, really. That's like working with the cheese maker to see where what their intentions are because, you know, affinage is a collaboration.
Yeah.
And we're involved as much as the cheesemaker and we've got to look after their cheese. So there's a conversation about that, but there's certain elements. And the one thing that I always get that I remember from learning with Hervé and Mons and Laurent Mons in France is acidity.
Yeah.
Normally a cheese, and it's hard to categorize, but when I iron a cheese or taste a bit of a cheese, there's this particular sharp acidic note which tells me that it's got time.
Right.
And that's hard to convey what that is without, you know, doing it for 11 years. But you kind of, you get that point and that can reappear over the age of the cheese. And you think, 6 months more or 6 months, you know.
Yeah.
But some of the really interesting cheeses are like Brie's.
Yeah.
That you can mature over the course of 1 to sort of 12 weeks.
Oh, really? Wow.
And really provide those different profiles. So yeah. You're familiar with the Brie, like Baron Bigold, which has a chalky middle.
Yeah.
That would be more lactic, fresh, grassy, with a little bit of mushroom kind of on the outside.
Yeah.
As soon as you get rid of that, that lactic freshness goes in replace for savoury and more aggressive flavours and a more silky texture. So getting people to try those three stages is always really interesting.
Yeah. What cheese would you kind of recommend as a one for try? You know, a cheese that is good at various stages in its development and it... There's a good young version, there's a good aged version of it.
Yeah, well, you know, the French Comté is always good to try that because, they've got much bigger facilities and they've been doing that for a long time. And you can see, Comté really around 13 to 15 months is kind of my favourite profile.
Right.
We've kind of got this addiction in the UK with aged,
vintage. It's like aged is better. Yeah.
Vintage,
And I read that your basic supermarket cheese, when they say vintage or extra mature, it's not actually, they can just use those words, but it doesn't really mean anything.
And that's the difference between mass-made and artisan.
Of course, yeah.
You can use starter cultures, one which is famous in the industry, which is called Helveticus. And as human beings, starter culture is the stuff you put in your milk to basically kick things off. And there's one that's called Helveticus, and it's a lot of people just are addicted to it. And you find that in a lot of your cheeses that you have in supermarkets.
Really?
It's acidic, savoury, salty, boom, done. You want to eat more.
So it just does that job, basically.
Yeah, and it matures really quickly.
Right.
So you can do it in vac packs, in giant wheels, giant sort of blocks over the course of 4 months.
Yeah.
When to get to that same sharpness from a Montgomery's cheddar or Westcombe or Pitchfork, you're talking 18 months. You can't naturally do that in a natural way. It's interesting. And I think both have a place in our life, by the way.
Yeah.
And I always need to be really clear about this because I seem really biased, but I think they both have a place in our lives.
Yeah, of course.
But I think people just need to understand that artisans can't be mass made.
No.
You know, it's impossible, and that comes with a certain price point and things like that. Mass made can kind of be artisan.
Yeah.
Because they can almost, artisan's not a protected name. Anyone can put artisan on a piece of packaging. So for 10p, you can print on, a side of a mass-made cheddar, this is an artisan cheddar.
Product, yeah,
it wouldn't be morally correct, but people...
It wouldn't be illegal either.
But people do that.
Yeah.
But for a artisan to be mass-made, that's millions of pounds of investment.
Wow. Yeah.
Machinery, people, funding, investors.
Yeah.
And I think that we just need to protect the artisans a little bit more.
I agree,
absolutely.
Let's talk a bit about conditions and environment, because you said the flavour and texture of cheese can be significantly influenced by the conditions in which it's aged. And I know, obviously, you've got your, at Rennet and Rind, you've got your ageing room.
Yeah.
But people use all sorts of things, don't they?
Yeah.
What are the conditions? Are there ideal conditions, or is it a different condition for a different cheese?
Yeah, so it varies. And, there is a standard area, which I said about the cheddars early, 8 to 10 degrees, 85% humidity. That's kind of like standard. But obviously, biomes and what you're creating and what you can see on the cheese responds better to different things.
Okay.
So, lowering the humidity to bring out more moisture in the cheese. So you get a drier, more flinty texture that's in there. So there's no real rhyme. There is a set rule, that people have created and found out through millions of years.
But what about cheeses, say, for example, because you mentioned about cheeses in caves.
Yeah.
What about, there's still people out there, aren't there, who are using like caves to age cheese?
Yeah, Roquefort in France is still in caves. And you've got Wookie Hole that are bringing over their cheddars and maturing them. I mean, it's the perfect condition.
Yeah.
You want stability. So a cave provides that stable temperature and that stable humidity. And the cheese loves that. And that's why I always talk about people having cheese in the fridge at their home. You know, that the reason why it goes off pretty quickly and dries out quickly is because you're opening and closing the door.
Yeah, of course.
And so you're changing that humidity and the cheese is going, I don't like this.
Yeah.
I'm going to multiply, you know, you always find on the surface of your cheese, not the rind, that there's new mold on there.
Yeah.
And that's most of the rind mold going, you're harming me.
Protesting.
Yeah, I'm going to move to the most fertile land, which is the face of the cheese, which I haven't been able to get access to for all these months. So it's, you know, you have your own cave
at home. Where should we keep the cheese at home then?
Tupperware.
Oh, really?
Tupperware. So I did this video online.
Okay.
Where I made, how can you make your own maturing room at home? And it was a shoebox.
Wow.
A little hygrometry system that you can pick up for, you know, £10, you know, and that's temperature and humidity, and a little bit of water.
Yeah.
So if you're at home and you don't have a shoebox
or
you don't fancy creating that, Tupperware, a little bit of mineral water on some kitchen cloth.
Yeah.
Put that in with the Tupperware. Put your cheese in there. Seal the top.
Yeah.
Because as you open and close that cheese, the atmosphere is locked in. So the cheese isn't going to be exposed to that kind of aggressive nature that opening and closing a fridge does.
This is a top tip.
We've got into the top tip area.
No, this is fine. It's great. if you are doing it in a cave or wherever you're doing it, I think you mentioned like microflora as well. So that's the things that are in... just things in the air that are going to change the nature of your cheese.
Yeah, and that's like a twofold thing. Yeah. So what you've been maturing in there, you know, what natural biomes you've got in there, how much penicillin you've got in there. And that's kind of done visually that you can see what's landing on the cheese. But, you know, bacteria is like moving through this country.
Yeah.
And when I say bacteria, I do mean good bacteria, by the way. It's become this thing where bacteria is like a bad word, isn't it? And, you know, that you get these swathes of things that come through that you just don't recognize. I remember one time we were maturing some blue cheeses and we went into the maturing rooms, shut it down at the end of the night. By shutting it down, we can close it and turn off the lights. Came back in the next morning. And there's little kind of like mold sprouts on top of the cheese within 24 hours. And still to this day, no one really knew what it was.
Yeah.
No one really understood what that cheese was or that mold was. And there's been times where, you know, one scenario I was explaining the other day was we left, shut the maturing rooms on a Friday, came back in on Monday, and in the center of the room, which only could be described as a cream egg that's been smashed, Cadbury's cream egg, smashed in the center of the floor. You know, this white orange mold that was there just
that's
developed
bizarre.
Over the weekend. Never seen it before.
It's like
and never seen it
aliens
again.
Or Toy Story or something. Like, is something creeping around inside your cheese room?
Oh God, that makes it sound quite ominous, doesn't it? But it's fascinating.
Yeah,
and it's really fascinating how good these bacteria are
and
for you.
How alive the cheese is.
How alive they are. Yeah. And this is fermentation in general. Yeast in beer, you know, in wine. And, you know, these are the like, kind of trifecta, you know, bread, alcohol, cheese that we've been doing for years.
Yeah. I think you said as well, because, you know, it's not just cheese that can be aged. You can also use affinage for mature other foods like meat and wine.
Yeah.
And I don't think people have got a problem with that because they know like 38-day aged beef or, you know, wine that's been like kept in a certain way. So it's just for us to kind of make that jump, isn't it? To realize how much care needs to go into it.
Yeah, and to understand that, the care that goes into it and the artisan nature of it. And, we're fermenting things all the time. We've done it for years.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have fridges, you know, back in the Neolithic period. A little bit of a history divergent there.
Yeah.
In this. So you would have to cure. And that's essentially what you're doing. You're trying to remove as much moisture as possible to prolong the life of your milk.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it will sour and, you know, potentially be harmful at that period.
And do you think with the, you know... I guess Affinage of the Year is happening again this year, the competition. Will more cheesemakers be employing affineurs to kind of finish their cheeses, do you think?
I don't know, really.
Yeah.
Since Affinage of the Year and since, you know, people, that standard being recognised and then I suppose people understanding more of what I do. Yeah. I've been requested more to do some like consultancy.
So yeah. You've shown them how it's done kind of thing and what they can do, what the potential is.
Yes. Yeah. And the consultancy fee is a night down the pub. Yeah. So
the best kind of consultancy fee.
So essentially, yeah. And we did one recently in partnership with Old Roan, which is a phenomenal Wensleydale style, wow, cloth bound, buttered, yeah, in Yorkshire. I mean, someone said, and I won't steal his quote, it's from Fine Cheese, that if you Old Roan could be the first Wensleydale you ever tried,
yeah,
it would just be the best experience ever. Like, people would be addicted to Wensleydale because we're, yeah, just used to the vac-packed, loads of moisture, yeah, citrus, Old Roan, you put it on your tongue, it's got a little bit of robust texture, yeah, it crumbles perfectly, and then the acidity is like sour, creme fraiche.
Wow.
It's just a little bit of citrus.
Yeah.
It's like acidic, but on so many different levels. Amazing. I absolutely love that cheese. So yeah, we went up there and Ben was having trouble with a bitter note that he wasn't happy with. So we brought him down. We matured him for 4 months. You can see this online on, yeah, our website, cool, you know, Rennet and Rind. And if you check out the blog,
yeah,
section, it shows all my data of what I did with the cheese, how many times I turned it, how much I brushed it. So if you love data,
yeah,
go there.
Perry's your man. It's got spreadsheets, Excel, got it covered.
I've got it covered. I've got formulas coming, yeah, out of my ears. Yeah, go and have a look there. And the great thing about that was just how, you know, we were judging all these cheeses and, yeah, some were held in, you know, different cheesemaker stores. And I remember one particularly that we opened up. So it's like 8 different cheeses and it smelled of Hafod. You could have blindfolded it. Hafod is a Welsh cheddar. It's phenomenal.
Wow.
And they had it in their stores. You could have blindfolded me. I said, that is Hafod.
You know what it was.
And these 8 cheeses, all the base notes are similar,
yeah,
but very, very different. It's hard to, it's something that you completely know it, but you, yeah, don't know it at all. And we all agreed that, you know, we in our batch, you know, our cheese, we eradicated the, yeah, acidity. You know, the tips were given to Ben and Sam, you know, about what I would do with their cheese, yeah, to do this. So it's a nice little community.
That's
feel
lovely,
that,
yeah,
we have.
It feels like you're sort of really, you know, pushing things forward and helping people get to make the best possible product they can.
Yeah. Well, I think if you turn the artisan industry in on itself and kind of like make it a competitive nature,
yeah,
that actually we're not selling much artisan cheese as a country.
You need to be sharing, don't you?
Yeah, and we're, yeah, really, really good at it.
Yeah.
You know, we've got these amazing pastures, amazing animal husbandry skills. Yeah. We're regularly at the World Cheese Awards in the top 10.
Yeah.
With this amazing industry.
We need to win it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I just feel like a lot of people just, yeah, are going to embrace that, yeah, over the coming years. Lovely. And I've seen, since COVID, a massive uptick in people being far more interested,
yeah,
in
absolutely,
artisan cheese. And it's so important. And people eat that cheese and they have a really amazing experience and they can see the value. Yeah. And it's so filling,
yeah,
because it's not designed to make you eat as much as possible, as frequently as possible.
It's just designed to be tasted and,
yeah,
savoured. And what have you got coming up this year? What's happening apart from... When does the Affineur 2023 happen?
It's June.
June, great.
So
those people will already be in the...
Yeah, so I have my cheese at the moment, yeah, unnamed.
Okay.
I'm leaving that. I think I've got a name. Over the literally
Can you
last
tell us
2 weeks.
What style you're
so
doing?
So we've got 4 styles. One is a Quicks cheddar. So,
yeah,
same one again, but a smaller size.
Right, okay.
And then we've got Baron Bygod, which is a famous Breeder Most style,
yeah,
made in Suffolk by John Industrial Crickmore, probably the best artisan cheese in this country. Then we've got Cropwell Bishop Stilton, which I love. And then we've got a cheese made down,
wow,
in Somerset called Solstice, which is wash rind.
And you're aging all, you're refining all 4 of those?
Yeah, I do all 4 this year.
Wow.
Just because...
Because you can. I mean, you know, if anyone can do it, chief of cheese, well, you can do it.
like the first year was about,
yeah,
do you know what, like, I've got to do what I'm known for,
yeah,
doing. And, you know, luckily, yeah, I was crowned Britain's first Affineur of the year, which is great for marketing, by the way, because,
yeah,
I don't need to reprint things,
no,
every year. I will always be the first ever. So there's that. And so I wanted to do a good job. This year, I still obviously want to do a good job,
yeah,
but I want to be a little bit more experimental.
Experimental, yeah, I love it.
So I've been a little bit more experimental. So the cheese, the cheddar that I'm maturing at the moment, the Quicks, mm-hmm, the same one as last year, I've kind of done this mold compress. So I've matured 3 cheddars, which I love, for more than a year, let them grow out of the side and then basically like clamp them on top of the cheese for the first 3 months of its life.
Wow.
To really get the mold going.
Yeah.
And it looks incredible at the moment.
I might have to come down to see the reveal.
Definitely. It's going to be a really good event. Yeah, and cool. There's a lot of free cheese. Yeah. And, you know, if you're interested in the cheese industry, everyone's there who you need to know in the artisan industry. So,
might be inspiring the next Perry Wakeman, you know, someone who's in IT now thinking, well, I want to be a cheesemaker now. I want to be working in cheese.
Who knows? I mean.
And you mentioned the blog there, the website, TikTok, Instagram. Where can everyone tell us all the places to go and see what you're doing, where you're sharing all that information and videos and stuff?
Yeah, pretty much our website is rennetandryan.co.uk.
Yep.
And then our Instagram social media handles are just Rennet and Rind.
Rennet and Rind.
So just Google that and we'll come up. And then my own personal one is Perry Matures Cheese. So
Perry Matures Cheese.
That's a little bit more lifestyle.
Yeah.
that one. But, but you're more than welcome to check out my lifestyle. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for chatting to us today, Perry. It's been fascinating. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Olive Podcast. For recipes and more information, head to olivemagazine.com. Do remember to listen out for our effortless bonus episodes where our guests reveal their best cooking cheats, hacks and shortcuts. And don't forget to subscribe at iTunes, Acast, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.